This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, a Bloomberg story earlier this year found that corporate values do have a market price, specifically noting some studies suggesting that investors punish the valuations of companies that either breach their corporate responsibilities or overpromise on their greenness. So with a historical view on companies and how they pursue profits and purpose, let's get to it with William Magnuson. He is associate professor at Texas A&M Law School. His new book, For Profit, A History of Corporations, he's also taught at Harvard. He is also the author of Blockchain Democracy, and he joins us via Zoom from Austin, Texas. Professor Magnuson, nice to have you here with Paul Sweeney and myself. So tell us about this book. What was your thesis going into it?
Well, thank you so much for having me on. When I first started writing this book, I really didn't have a thesis. My idea was I wanted to explain where this institution, this economic institution that affects all of our lives in so many ways, where it came from and why we created it in the first place. And so I started with ancient Rome. I began looking at where corporations first arose, and the first economic institution that really starts looking like a modern corporation was ancient Rome, where they had something called the Societates Publicanorum. And I then explored it through the chapters, how they evolved over time from ancient Rome through the Medici Bank, through the East India Company. And I spotlighted these important points, these turning points in history when the corporation truly changed and until it eventually evolved into the institution that we know of it as today.
Professor, in business school, I learned that it was the role of the corporation to maximize profits for shareholders, full stop. Now that seems to be evolving to maybe something broader, maybe maximize the good of the common stakeholders, maybe the common good. How do you see that playing out? Is that really being embraced across corporate America?
That's right. And I think that is corporate law 101, right? Corporate law 101 tells you the purpose of a corporation, indeed the duty of a corporation, is to maximize profits. That said, that is a relatively recent development, right? Before the 20th century, no one would have ever told you that the sole purpose, the only thing a corporation was supposed to be thinking about, was profits for shareholders, right? And Elizabethan England, when the East India Company was first formed, it didn't promote itself by saying, we're going to enrich this small group of merchants in London. No, it told Queen Elizabeth that it was going to expand the trade, the international trade of England. When the Medici Bank was formed in Florence, it didn't say, well, I'm going to enrich this small Medici family. It said, we are going to contribute to the flourishing of Florence. And it did lead indeed to the enrichment of that city. And so I think that the idea that corporations are solely supposed to pursue profit is a relatively recent development. Part of it has been driven by developments in the law, right? So developments in the law in the last century and a half or so, corporations have gone from institutions that had to be formed by the monarch or the government, and you had to petition it for a charter, to now it is very simple. Anybody could form a corporation. I could form a corporation in the next 15 minutes if I wanted to. And so that means that corporations no longer have to justify themselves to a government, to a people.
How much of maybe when companies go wrong and things go wrong has to do with companies are in the public markets, publicly traded? And ultimately, it is about, as Paul was talking about earlier, making money.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I do think that a really important theme in the history of corporations is the role of stock markets, right? Until the 1600s, there was no real stock market. The East India Company was one of the founding members of the London Stock Exchange. And so nowadays, they, of course, have become these all-powerful forces. We have shareholder activism. We have proxy contests. They now exert a new kind of control. We see corporations in many ways responding to the demands of shareholders. And there's a big debate now in corporate law and in the public discussion about just how shareholders affect corporations. Do they make corporations turn to more short-term oriented goals at the cost of long-term goals? And so that's one of the big themes of the book, is trying to explore how do we make sure that corporations aren't just focusing on short-term profits, but thinking about the long-term as well.
Well, I guess you need proper incentives there. Is that in order to impact behavior, I would think?
Yeah, I think that it's a couple things. One is you need incentives, right? You need laws, you need incentives, you need economic structures that give corporations reasons, real tangible reasons for thinking not just about the short term or not just about shareholders, but also about other long term constituencies. But you also need a cultural change, right? I think that historically, we have thought about corporations in terms of civic common virtue, right? We want corporations to be contributing to the common good. And I think that in order for corporations and particularly corporate executives to have that in mind, we need a change in the expectations, the cultural expectations of them.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
So, Professor, I'm wondering, you know, given your research here, fast forward to today, are there any companies that are doing it right or industries that are doing it right in terms of maybe expanding how they view themselves within their markets, within society more broadly?
Yes. Well, it's hard not to think when you think about a corporation that is considering all the factors, right? Not just shareholder profit, but also other features, the environment, workers, the country. It's hard not to think about Patagonia, right? Patagonia is obviously the outdoor equipment maker and clothes maker, but their founder has always been deeply committed to promoting not just the interests of shareholders, but also thinking about broader constituencies. And so I think that type of corporation, a corporation that has in mind not just their own independent small fiefdoms, but increasing the flourishing of their society and their community as well, that those kinds of corporations, I think, are the ones that are going to succeed long term.
Why aren't there more Patagonias then today?
That's a very good question. I think there really has been a cultural shift now. We don't expect corporations to have those kinds of goals, right? As we mentioned earlier, today it is sort of corporate law 101 that says that corporate executives not only should be only thinking about profits, but they actually might even have a fiduciary duty to only consider profits. And so I think that is part of it. There's pressure on executives to say, well, I can't frame my business strategy in terms of anything but shareholder profits. And so my book in many ways is to explore how that shift came about. Why did this happen historically speaking?
You know, environmental, social, governance, ESG investing, that's become a bigger part of, I think, the investing landscape. Do you think shareholders may be able to effect some change here? As even BlackRock, the biggest, you know, asset manager out there, is really pushing its managers to incorporate ESG.
Yes, ESG is going to be an increasing trend, I think, in the history of corporations. I've always thought that environment makes a lot of sense. Social makes a lot of sense. Governance, I think, is sort of an outlier here, right? The idea that we should be improving the governance of corporations doesn't quite seem like the environment and social causes. That said, there's going to be increasing pressure. We've already seen increasing pressure on corporations to be considering these other elements. Part of the problem, though, with the current ESG movement is that they've been struggling to find real metrics, right? It's hard to find a metric to say, well, this corporation is doing better on ESG than this other one. That just doesn't make a lot of sense currently.
So history isn't always a guide for what's to come, but based on what you've learned about the history of corporations, where they came from, where they went, can you get any indication of kind of where they are going ultimately longer term? Especially, I think with Paul, you know, Paul and I, we talk about it all the time, about all the money going into ESG. You would think that might have an impact in terms of companies' initiatives and being maybe more purpose-driven as well as profit-driven. But where do companies go from here ultimately?
Sure. I think that the message that I take away when I examine these historical corporations is that humanity works best when it works together. Right. Corporations are these tremendous vessels for improving economic efficiency, for producing goods, for responding to the demands of consumers. Right? They're this tremendously efficient vehicle for doing that, but they also have these flaws. And so each generation, we have a new type of corporation. I think we're currently living in the age of the startup, right? The Facebook world, the Twitter world, and we're starting to see some of the downsides of that startup world, right? We've got Twitter engaging in all sorts of difficult content moderation questions. We've got Facebook involved in election disinformation. And so we're going to be seeing a lot of developments in the legal world in the next few years. And I think we'll also see developments in corporations as well.
All right. Really appreciate it. William Magnuson, professor, associate professor of at Texas A&M Law School, his new book, For Profit, A History of Corporations.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.